There are so many women out there that are taking a stand against gender inequality and are paving the way for the future generation. Ordinary women that are creating a more inclusive and powerful society, free from stereotypes, racism and sexism. And I'm here to share their stories with all of you. Stay tuned, because this is WEN Power, your source of inspiring, powerful and positive stories. And I'm here to discover how we can change the narrative, one story at a time. I am your host, Ilaria Biancacci, journalist and founder of WEN Power. Does your work bring you joy? For many people, the words work and joy don't fit together, but Beth Stalwood is changing that. Beth is an executive coach, the founder of Work Joy, and wants the world to know that work doesn't have to be miserable. She helps people take small steps that make a big difference to improving how they feel about work. Welcome, Beth, to this new episode of WEN Power Podcast, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I can see that. I promise you that this was going to be a very, very informal chat, like with friends, and we want just to bring a little bit of joy into work joy, actually, into the life of all the people that are listening to us today. But before we do that, I just wanted to ask you, would you like to tell us a bit more about you? Who is Beth?
Oh, such a big question. And I will try and do this very briefly so you don't get bored of hearing my life story. Well, I'm Beth Stalwood. I am a coach, a facilitator, an organizational development consultant. And I am on a mission to help more people get more joy in their working lives. I think, particularly over the last couple of years, but actually for many years before that, a lot of people aren't having a lot of fun at work. They're finding work a bit miserable. If you look at things like the memes and stuff about, oh, another day in the office, or how many hours people are working, or how the joy has just gone out, that spark has gone out of people's working worlds. And I'd just like us to change that. I'd like people to find joy in their work. So this is what my mission is all about. I actually love to work, and I always have done, and I've always managed to be able to find the joy. And as a coach, I spend a lot of time helping people to find that joy in their working lives. And I think there's a lot of things that organizations can do, but I also believe that let's not just wait for the organization to do stuff for you. What brings people joy is different for every single person. So I'm really big on people taking some personal responsibility for actually finding, cultivating, maintaining the joy in their lives. And I think it's just something that when you think about it, we spend more than a third of our entire lives working or at work, depending on how you like to define it. I used to always say at work, but actually work is a very different place now than it used to be. So I think a third of your life, do you really want to spend it being miserable? Do you want to spend it being gloomy? Do you want to spend it not enjoying yourself? Or do you want to really find ways of bringing some more joy into your working life? So yeah, that's a little bit about me and what I'm here to do, and try and hopefully inspire some of your listeners to maybe think about their joy in their working lives as well.
Well, I mean, I think we're already on a good path here, the first five minutes of this interview. And apart from this, what do you like to do, Beth, in your free time? Oh. How else you bring joy into your life?
So there's lots of things that bring me joy in my life. The number one thing is my dog. So I'm a dog mummy to a beautiful Australian Labradoodle, which is a big, big old mix of different things. But she looks like a teddy bear. She's called Mabel. And she is my favorite person in the whole world. She's wonderful. So yeah, my dog, I love dog walks. I love being in the countryside. I love anything to do with water. And my lovely little local outdoor swimming pool is open this week, so I'm going to be getting my swim on soon. Love that. And I love a musical. So take me to the theatre, give me some razzmatazz, some dancing, some singing, and I'm the happiest person ever. I think this is maybe one of the things about the key to work joy. I'm actually really easily pleased. Like, I can find joy in the little tiny small things, but those are three big ones.
I share with you the passion for musical as well. I do have a dog, but he lives far away in Sardinia, so can't see him every day. Aww. But I'm a dog person too. I love them anyway.
Yes. I think dogs show us so much about joy and how we should live. They've got it right.
Yeah, they do it. Sometimes I wish, you know, sometimes it's like life is much easier for my dog than for me sometimes.
Exactly.
So, and how did the journey of WorkJoy started? Because you work, I guess, before you work for someone else, and then you decided to actually, you know, work for yourself, be an entrepreneur and make WorkJoy a reality. So how did that happen?
Oh, how far back do you want me to go? I'm going to go really far back, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, sure. So
I did my first paid job when I was about 8 years old. And I was a child actress. And I got picked up by a chauffeur-driven Mercedes and driven to Pinewood Studios, where I was recording an advert. And I was just like overwhelmed by the joy of how fun that kind of work was. Now, that is not the experience that most people have in their first job, right? It's not. And it was a pretty special way to start your working career. And ever since then, I have really sought out and worked in jobs that you may find people be like, oh really, but I've just always managed to find the joy in them. So I did things when I was a student, like working in shoe shops, and I worked in bars, and then I after university got a real job, you know, a real job. And then I did a music degree and kind of really hoped I'd be in the West End stage, and then realized that, oh, you have to actually like earn money and be sensible. So I got a real job and I ended up working in investment, but I found my passion there fairly early on in delivering training and coaching people, and I spent my career doing that. So my employed career happened, I spent time in learning and development, I spent time in operations and customer service, and my niche was really in that learning and development zone. So I worked for an investment company, I worked for the civil service for a while, and I also worked in sports in all different areas. So, you know, I would always say, like, when you work in investment, we had like budget to do really good work, and we got really creative and could do really cool things and learned loads through that experience working with other people. When I worked in the public sector, we had like a budget of zero to do anything learning and development. So again, I had to bring out my creativity and kind of work around what I could deliver and really challenge myself to do that. And then working in sports, a really interesting one as well, because so many people are really passionate about the subject, trying to help make things happen and build things together. And then the story of becoming an entrepreneur also goes back to my childhood as well. So my mom always worked for herself. She ran a business for years, still does. She keeps telling me she's retiring, but she's like 70 something now and there's no sign of it actually happening. She's kind of partially retired, but yeah. But she always worked and she worked from home. So she always had an office at home. And I don't know if it was just like the stationery supply catalog, because I do love a bit of stationery, or I just had the education that that's what work was. And she really enjoyed her work. There was a lot of work joy for her, which wasn't the same as for my dad. He didn't enjoy his job, I don't think, really at all. And I think I grew up knowing that that was probably where I'd end up, running my own business. And then just over 5 years ago, which has come up to the 5-year anniversary, about a year before that, I decided I was going to go start my own business. I had a wonderfully supportive boss who knew what I was going to try and do. And I spent a year whilst working, setting everything up and getting ready to go. And I loved my job. So it wasn't like I was leaving because I didn't want to do it, but I had this real passion to go and do work and work with lots of different people. For me, variety is one of the things that brings me lots of work joy. I know that. So I get to do lots of different things and lots of different people, and that is brilliant. And then about 2 years ago, a bit longer than 2 years ago, as the pandemic started, in fact, I was thinking for a long time, I really want to write a book, and I didn't know what to write it about, but I knew I really had the want to write passion. So I was thinking about it, and I did a wonderful course around writing, about book writing. And from that, the theory of work joy started to form. And I am currently in the middle of writing the book. It's hopefully going to be published January next year. So watch out for that if you're up for it. And work joy became another part of my business. So we have a coaching program. We have a club, which is an amazing community of people who are all trying to get more joy in their lives. Obviously, there's going to be the book, there's my podcast, the Work Joy Jam. And I just kind of allowed it to build and put this message out there that actually we can do, there is stuff you can do that works that will get you more joy in your working life. Right. I think I've gone around the houses a little bit there.
No. It's all very, I mean, it's your story. So you have to share it because it's really important what you say at the beginning, actually, that there is so much focus on negativity and actually what make us upset at work. Mm. Although it's funny sometimes, you know, to see these memes and think like, okay, that could be me, my boss, my colleague.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, we tend to look at the positive things in the same way and to don't highlight it. So I believe that something like work joy, it's really needed. And perhaps even after the pandemic, you know, that people, they have been working from home alone for a long time. They're slowly going back to the office to a normal routine. There's been a lot of negative thoughts going on. And I guess it's not easy, you know, to always keep on a positive track. So what you're doing actually is super interesting. And I hope that whoever is listening to us today will find this interesting in the same way I do, and it will get in touch with you maybe to just, you know, discover more how they can be more happy in their workplace. And this is a cheeky question though. Have you always been happy in a workplace, or there's been situation where they kind of challenge this positive attitude, and how did you navigate those experience?
I think it's a great question, and I think I'm gonna start with saying one of the theories of work joy is that you cannot be joyful all the time, because that's like false positivity, fake positivity. And from my perspective, fake positivity is just as toxic as being miserable. It's putting a slapping a smile on even when you don't feel it. It's weird. So we're not here about faking it. What we're here about is about building more of joy more often, and accepting that there's always going to be stuff that you don't like. There's always going to be people that maybe get on your nerves. There's going to be policies that make you miserable. These things exist because we exist here in the real world of work, and there is no such thing as the perfect organization. There's no such thing as the perfect job. So it's not about finding it 100% of the time. It's about managing the gloomy stuff when it comes along and building the joyful stuff, so you have that resilience that even when you're going through those hard times, the tough bits, the difficult people, the difficult conversations, the highs and lows of normal life, you're able to maintain that resilience, that joyful resilience within yourself. So yeah, of course I've had challenging times at work. Of course I've been through, you know, I think early on in my career, I went through a couple of redundancy processes. That was always hard and tough and difficult, and really difficult not to take it personally and all of those kind of things. I've been, you know, stepping into leadership roles where you're not really sure where, you know, when you're taking that big leap and trying to lead people for the first time. I think that step from, you know, buddy to boss or mate to manager is a really tough one to do. And I've been in difficult situations where, you know, under-resourced, trying to get stuff done, trying to make an impact, struggling to get the influence, you know, all of the different things that I think many, many people go through. So have I always been 100% happy at work? No, because I don't think that's realistic. Have I always managed to work through it and find the joy? Yes. And that's kind of some of the work that I've been doing. That's what's going into the book, is what are the things that you can actually do. And there are some massively simple things that you can do, and there are some bigger, more complicated things that you can do. But so often we kind of think of things in the extreme. So we think of, we always have to be happy or we're totally miserable, and that neither of those things are usually true. Or we think, oh, I have to stay here and put up with everything as it is, or I have to leave my job. And again, there's a million and one different options in between those two things that we can think about. So it's about, as you say, like, we tend to focus on the negative. There is like neuroscience to prove why we do this. And we do, if there's one negative thing, we will make a big deal out of it. There's a mountains out of molehill situation that goes on a lot in our minds. Mm-hmm. And we forget to focus and look at and remember the positive stuff that happens, which means we have a disproportionate view often of how bad things actually are. And one of the things that I always recommend people do to start with, it's actually a free experiment that's on the website createworkjoy.com. you can go and download it for free right now if you want to, is the first thing to do is to understand where you get your joy from and where the work bloom comes from. Because everyone's a slightly different. And obviously there are themes that come up a lot. So bosses come up a lot, working hours come up a lot, etc. But if you spend a week, and I always recommend just take a working week and track the joy and track the gloom, you will find things that are tiny but make a massive, massive difference. And you'll probably also find some stuff that you hadn't really thought about. So as an example, when people do this exercise, some people kind of go, oh, do you know what? I'm always miserable at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's because I didn't take a lunch break. And it's like, well, just take a lunch break then. There's some really simple things that you can put into your day, like hygiene factors, that will make a big difference. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know what actually brings you joy and you don't know what brings you gloom, you just have an overall perspective of it, you're probably not going to get very far. So just take that as a first step, is understand what it is. And you can do that just by tracking. And some people do this experiment, and it totally changes their perspective. Some people do it and it's like, here's what I need to work on. And some people do it and then keep doing it so that they actually have a better, more realistic understanding of what their joy levels were throughout the week, rather than just focusing on the bad stuff. Because that's where our brain is always going to put us. It's going to put us in the bad stuff.
Exactly.
And it just helps you remember the good stuff too.
Exactly, exactly. And you already gave some of these tips, but I don't want to reveal too much about work joy, so people will get a little bit more of curiosity to get in touch with you. But would you like to share, I don't know, other 2-3 tips, maybe specifically for women, and if we speak as well to the younger generation, that maybe they are just approaching, you know, they're getting their first job. What are your 3 top tips for them to just, you know, be happy on the workplace?
Yeah. I think the first one, and this will be for women, for men, younger, older, is to remember that you personally are responsible for your level of joy. It's really easy to blame other people and to think that other people need to do stuff, but actually it's up to you and you can do some things. And I think it's that kind of radical personal responsibility for this stuff that sets people on the path of having more work joy. So number one, no one else is responsible for how you feel. That's up to you. You might be in a difficult situation. You might be working with difficult people, all of the other things that can happen in our lives. But remember, it's up to you. I think the second one, and I'd probably direct this at women more than men, although I think it's an interesting one. I don't want to get too stereotypical here, but when I work with women, and I do a lot of work with women, one of the things I find as a feature is that women tend to spend a lot of time looking after everyone else's joy, looking after everyone else's problems, dealing with other people's issues, trying to solve problems for people, to the point that actually to their detriment, that they stop thinking and prioritizing themselves. And the thing is, you've heard this bit a million times before, this is not new, you know, the whole idea that you can't pour from an empty cup. I think there are swathes of women out there in burnout, especially after the pandemic, where they've been looking after everybody. And there will be men in this category too, so please don't take it in any way to be stereotypical here, but there are a lot of women in this situation right now where they are so themselves is so far down their to-do list, they've forgotten that investing a little bit of time and energy into themselves will make a difference. So my second tip, in short, is to put yourself on the top of your to-do list, right up the top, because you're going to have to do something. If it's been so far down that you never get to you, you're going to have to do something drastic to make that difference. Put yourself at the top and see where that leads you. And then I think my third tip, and maybe I'll aim this one more at the people who are early on in their careers, is to not always follow the yellow brick road. So I'm going to do a musical reference here because I just can't help myself. So in The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy follows the yellow brick road. And I always think that, especially in big corporations, if you're out there working in a big organization, there tends to be this idea that your career is set out for you, that you take this step, this step, this step. And somehow when you get to the Emerald City of, I don't know, being a partner, being a leader, being a director, being a head of whatever it is that you aspire to be, that somehow there's some magic in that. And when you get there, when you have done all your striving and hard work and late nights and all of the stuff that comes with striving towards a goal, that somehow it will all be perfect. And a lot of people I know get there. So they early on in their career, they've seen this vision, they want to be there. They get there and they realize, number one, it's not all perfect and they have to do the work anyway, the work on themselves, the work on understanding their own joy, the work on what they really want, et cetera, versus what an organization filters you towards. And sometimes what people realize is that that wasn't what they wanted at all. And they've spent 20 years striving for something that was someone else's dream. And they've lost their dream. They've lost their passion. They've lost the things that they really care about. So I think there's something here of if you are in the early days of this, I mean, there's a totally different thing that if you've got there and you're like, I don't know what to do. If you're there, give me a call. If you're in your early days and you're thinking, how do I set myself up, is broaden your horizons with what a career looks like. A career doesn't have to be one shape. It doesn't have to be one size. It doesn't have to be one job. It doesn't have to be one organization. One thing we are blessed with in the current world is the world really is your oyster when it comes to careers. There are so many different things that you can try, but don't get stuck on the conveyor belt. Don't get stuck on the yellow brick road. Take a moment occasionally to have a little look around and see what else is out there.
Interesting. Interesting, really, really interesting, this part, because sometimes also it comes as well to the way corporate and companies are also setting up the path for the employees to progress. It's like, you know, for you to go from A to Z, you necessarily need to do all of these steps. Otherwise, you're never going to get there. What if I find another way, you know, to get there? Or yeah. I can find, you know, I still going to manage to reach the goal if that's obviously what I want to achieve. But I want to do it on my own way, on my own terms, at my own pace, you know. So this is really, really important sometimes. And I believe in what you say, that really important to clarify what's your dream, what you want to do, and before you actually really find yourself screaming and thinking, oh yeah, I lived someone else's life for all of this time, now what I do now, you know. So really, really important. And if we want to flip the coin and say, give two or three advice to the employers and to tell them how they can make us all a little bit more happy at work, what can we say to them?
Oh gosh, the employers, that's going to be a whole nother book when it comes to it, definitely. I think for employers, the thing to remember is that everybody's joy is slightly different. And big organizations, when they have hundreds of thousands of employees, they're trying to look for the most efficient way of doing stuff, right? So it's like, let's put everybody into a box and pretend that everybody is the same.
It is not.
And humans are wonderfully complicated and complex and different and diverse and have wildly different needs and wants. And some of the people in an organization, what they want is, if I do these 10 things, everyone will be fine. And there isn't a list of 10 things. There's a list of 100,000 things, because everybody has their own 100 things. So there's so many different things. And I think this is around, how do you create an organization that has really good, empathetic, understanding, inspiring, open leaders that are able to flex themselves to meet what different people need? Now, I'll say this with a balance, because an organization can't do things in 100,000 different ways. It just wouldn't work like that. But so often I find that the biggest gripes in people are things like policies that just don't make sense in the real world, or things like leaders who don't understand that there's a balance to be had and flexibility works both ways. So there'll be you'll have heard these stories before, and I hope they're less and less, but the person who works late every single night wants to leave early one day to go and see their kid in their school play. And their boss says, no, or when will you make up the time? And they're like, but I've made up the time in advance. I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of unpaid overtime hours. And, you know, little things like that are where people forget, and I think this is probably my second one. So my first one was around remembering that people are individuals. My second one is remember that people have lives outside of work. And if you allow people to have good lives outside of work, if you respect and honor the fact that families and friends and hobbies and pets and lives are important, and you allow people to have that space to enjoy their lives outside work, they will come into work better. So this isn't about just getting, this is like, actually, if I trot into work with a spring in my step because I've had a great weekend, I will work better that day than if I come in with the, oh, I've just been dreading it since last night attitude. So that's probably a second one. So leadership, thinking about people as individuals, remembering that people have a life outside work, respecting and honoring that, and understanding there's a balance between all those flexible things. And then I think, finally, I would probably just say, if you are a leader in an organization and you manage people, get to know and understand what it is that brings them joy. As an example, you know, I've been lucky enough to have some great bosses, and one of my bosses understood that I have a little passion for stationery. So if I ever did anything that was like brilliant, you know, for recognition, they would buy me some stationery and I'd be as happy as Larry. You know, it doesn't, people always think it needs to be these massive things like big bonuses and pay rise and stuff. Obviously we all want those. And if we had a magic wand, everyone would want it, but it's the little things that recognize people as an individual, you know, a little handwritten thank you card, something that, you know, their favorite beer or their favorite wine or something that they care about. You show that you care about them as a human being for the work that they've done. I think there's some really tiny things you could do there.
Yeah, it's really important. It makes you feel less than an employee. I mean, you are an employee still, but you feel there is a connection and people actually do care, not just about your job, but you as a person, which is something that perhaps sometimes many companies, they forget. It's just like all about making numbers, making money, and that's it, you know? So really, really important as a reminder this. I got two last questions for you, and we almost done. The first time I met you actually was during the one of the workshops organized by the Santander Breakthrough Women Business Leader Mentoring Program, and I had the pleasure to participate in this in 2021. And as you know, this is a program as well where most of the women are employed entrepreneurs or are in that phase where they're still working for someone, but they also want to launch their own business on the side. And this could be a very daunting, a very challenging experience and moment. So how would you suggest to navigate a hybrid situation like this?
Yeah, it is a tough one. And having been there as well, like launching a business, it's a really hard thing to do. And I think Santander, the program there, is so brilliant because it connects you with those mentors. And obviously I was there working with Moving Ahead to help facilitate that program. And I would really advocate for mentorship, having a mentoring program, working with mentors. And obviously formal programs like that are absolutely brilliant, but it's sometimes that, you know, it's a competitive process to get on things like that. When you get to reading the book, when it finally gets published, I have a theory about a squad. So, and the theory about a squad is that you need different people with different skills in your immediate network. So you can have a big broad network, and a big broad network is brilliant, but you need some kind of closely held people who can support you through whatever it is that you're working through. And I have six different roles. I won't go through them all now because I know we need to finish up, but six different roles within that. So people, like, you need people who can connect you to other people. You need people who can challenge you. You need people who can be your cheerleader. That's three of them. I've given away three out of six, to be able to help you through this. And I often think it's not about relying on one person. It's like forming a little squad, a mini team, a SWAT team around you that bring different things, that challenge you in different ways, that support you in different ways, to be able to make those things happen. And actually, I think as well, there's probably something to be said for the fact that there's a lot of stuff in social media about the whole kind of start your own thing, live your joy, you'll never work a day in the life if you work. And that all stuff is total rubbish. I work 100% in my passion area. I work with clients that I choose. I work on great projects that are totally in my wheelhouse. And there are still things that I have to do that I don't want to do, right? There are still things within my entrepreneurship journey. Like I have to do finances and taxes and I can outsource some of it. But I still have to do some of that work. I have to do business development work. I have to, you know, there will always be some stuff in your entrepreneurship journey that you won't like. And it's, I would have a more balanced view. It's don't believe the hype about the fact that it doesn't feel like work, especially if you're doing on the side of a real job, you know, employed job at the same time. They're all real jobs, but you know what I mean? It will be hard work. It will be brilliant, but it will be hard. And hard doesn't equal bad. It just equals hard work. And to just lean on people, I think often, and I know I did this for ages, it's like I felt like I couldn't ask for help. And actually, I now outsource absolutely everything I possibly can to people who know better than me what they're doing. Right. So yeah. You don't have to do it all yourself. But it can feel really overwhelming. But I think there's also something about reminding yourself and connecting in with why, what your why is, what your purpose is behind whatever it is you're creating, and just really keep connected to that through the kind of middle of the night. Oh, my website's never going to work. And through the, I don't know why anyone would want to buy me, through the imposter syndrome moments where you're like, oh, no one's ever going to want what I have to offer. All of that stuff is to just connect yourself to why you want to do it and to connect yourself with the people who can help make it happen. Whether that's a mentor, would definitely recommend mentoring programs, or just mentors, as in, you know, I would count some ex-colleagues as mentors of mine, old bosses, people I used to work with. They would never call themselves mentors, but they're the people that you pick up the phone to and kind of get some advice from, and you have that mutually beneficial relationship. Mentoring can be both formal and massively informal, and it doesn't have to be labeled as mentoring for someone to be able to help you.
This was actually my next question, but we already answered, like, the importance of mentoring. I never had a mentor before. Maybe, yes, through university, some old professor, especially the one I was writing the thesis with, that would, you know, just give me a lot of advice, also work-related. But I didn't really actually experience the magic of a mentoring program. And it's really, really important. And it opens you a completely different perspective on yourself, on other people. And as an employed entrepreneur myself, I do really need to remind everything you just say to myself every day when I wake up. And, you know, just to say, like, I'm fine, Ilaria, you're fine. It's okay. It's just a tiny little bit hard right now, but it's going to be worth it. And you just, you know, keep going on. And for the middle of the night nightmares, kind of, I always have a notebook next to me if I do have an idea or something, so it's not gone the day after, so maybe this can help as well.
Yeah, definitely.
If any of you that is listening to us right now never thought about mentoring, please, you know, it's a really great opportunity, and it's just another person perspective on how things are going. And sometimes it's really important to take us out of this negativity vibes, where, you know, when everything goes wrong, that's where we tend to go. But if there is someone that is just directing our side on something else, then we come out of it stronger. So really important.
Definitely.
And the last question for me, I ask to all my guests, is if there was an advice, nothing that we have shared already, that you would just like to share with all the audience that is following right now, and is, you know, just an inspirational quote and advice or something, just to conclude the interview, I would love to hear it from you.
Yeah, I'm just looking up. I you can probably see me, but people won't be able to see it. I've got like a little wall of inspo over here, which has like little quotes on, and the one I want to share with you today, because I love it and I often look at it when I'm in this state, it says, worry is a misuse of your imagination. And I think that's really true. If we get stuck in that worry zone, it's very hard to be creative, it's very hard to think of solutions, it's just, and it can be just like in a cycle of worry. And if you can think about it as worry being, it's telling you you need to do something and move to action and move to thinking not about the problem, but think about where could it head you, what's it teaching you, and to use your imagination to think of the solution to whatever it is that's worrying you, rather than get stuck in the quagmire of worry. I would love to just encourage people to try and do that. And I think things like mentors, people in your squad, family members who are great at this stuff, use other people to help you step out of the worry and step into a more creative space, because that, number one, will feel better. And number two, if you use your imagination, what could you create? And as entrepreneurs, right, you've got to be able to think about what you can create, not what you need to worry about. So I love that one, because every time I get into a worry state, I'm not saying don't get into a worried state, because hello, we're going to do that at some point, right? Real world again. But just remind yourself, it's not a great use of your imagination, and your imagination can create amazing things if you give it the space to be. So my second, I know you said one, but I'm going to go two. My second bit of advice is, if you want to use your imagination more, go for a walk.
Okay. Well,
because space and away from your desk, I'm a big thing of a dog walk, but actually any kind of walk where you've got repetitive physical motion, where you're not staring at a computer, and you just put a question in your mind and allow your mind to wander on it, see where that leads you.
It's very good advice. I also would add a change of scenery. It could be a walk, yeah. It could be, you know, even one day you don't want to work from your desk, from your room, from your office, go and work somewhere else. Because if we got stuck in the same routine over and over again, then there is no more inspiration in everything we do.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well, Beth, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been like really interesting conversation, a lot of good advice for all of you out there. So if they want to get in touch with you, where do they find you?
Yeah, sure. So the website is www.createworkjoy.com. On there, you will find things about the podcast, which is the Workjoy Jam, which you can also find if you just search on your favorite podcast app. You'll find about the Workjoy Way, which is the 16-week coaching program with me, and it's a group program. It's amazing. And also Club Workjoy, which is our community-based program with different speakers, networking, amazing contact with other humans who are trying to do the Workjoy thing. You can email me hello@createworkjoy.com. And I'm also on social media, on LinkedIn as me and Create Workjoy. So link in with either of me. On Instagram, it's Create Workjoy. Facebook, same thing, Create Workjoy. So have a little look there, see what you want to do. And I'd love to hear from you. I do offer, there's a place on the website that you can just book a call with me. If you want to have a chat, be really happy to do that too.
Amazing. I'm going to put all the details as well in the podcast description so they don't miss the link. Amazing. Thank you again, Beth.
Thank you so much for having me.
If this was your first time listening to When Power Podcast, thank you for taking the time. You can find us on Podbean and Spotify. Subscribe to our newsletter on whenpower.co and keep up to date with all the future projects on all our social media at whenpower.uk. Thank you to all the women out there that are following and supporting WenPower. I will continue to bring to you powerful, inspiring and positive stories from all over the world. Don't forget, together we empower women. This is Ilaria for WenPower Podcast. Until next time.